This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
In the days of IVF, 45-year-old celebrity mums and miracle babies, it's easy to forget that for some couples, the miracle just never happens. Sometimes the heartbreaking journey of infertility simply peters out without a happy ending. And there are many reasons, some of them social, why some would-be parents just can't have kids. And there are just as many different ways of coping with it. Justine Davies has put together a book called An Inconceivable Notion, in which a number of men and women discuss how their childlessness has affected their lives and their relationships. Thanks so much, Justine, for joining us this morning.
You're welcome.
So, Justine, this must have been quite an emotional journey for you, just to write this story and share all these people's lives.
It was. Look, it was just, I was actually very surprised by how emotionally draining I found it just writing it. I should say I'm a parent, so I haven't personally experienced any of the stories that my interviewees went through. But often I'd be talking to them, and I did a lot of interviews on telephone and face-to-face and that sort of thing. Sometimes I'd get off the phone after a couple of hours of interviewing someone, and I'd literally have to lie down because I would be physically and emotionally drained after listening to what they'd been through.
Now, for people who are undergoing, you know, infertility, I think there's a couple of different things that they deal with. First, there's the actual grief and loss that, you know, needs to be dealt with about actually not having a child. But then there's also the relational stress, both on the couple and also on the relationships with friends and family. So, you know, let's sort of start with that social side of things. Like, one of the hard situations to get used to can often be when people, sometimes even strangers, say, you know, oh, have you got kids? I actually saw an interaction in a bookshop exactly like this. Someone was buying a kid's book, and the sales assistant just kept, you know, plummeting the lady with these questions. I could see that she was, you know, deeply, deeply distressed by this question. Do you have kids? You know, are you going to have any? Blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
Did your participants talk about that kind of thing?
Oh, definitely, a lot. That was actually a big bugbear for most of them, because I think kids, particularly when you meet somebody, it's one of those icebreaker type of topics. You know, we mentioned the weather or what do you do or do you have kids. It's one of those very common questions that people do get asked. But as one of the interviewees said, it often doesn't stop there. You know, if they say, do you have kids? No, I don't. Often the next question is, oh, how come? And for some of my interviewees, they said that's a very intensely personal thing. If you've just met someone, you may not want to go into the details about your husband's low sperm count or the fact that IVF hasn't worked or the fact that you've just had a miscarriage.
Exactly.
But it's something that people just do tend to ask as a conversation opener, which really it just shouldn't be.
Yeah. And look, I mean, for those who want a baby and don't have one, the other really difficult thing can be, how do you deal with the birth announcements? How do you deal with the baby shower invitations and the christenings and that kind of stuff? What did your contributors say about that?
It really depended where they were in their personal grief cycle. Mm. I liken not having children despite wanting them. You basically go through the same grief cycle as when you lose a loved one. You sort of have there's the disbelief, then there's the anger, there's the grief. Eventually you reach acceptance of that and you move on. But for the ones who were in that real grief stage, I think birth announcements were a very difficult thing. Perhaps even not so much the announcement itself, but more knowing that all their friends and family were watching them to see what their reaction would be of thing. They said often that public scrutiny was the hardest aspect of it all.
Yeah. And did most of the contributors, you know, did they want to talk about their infertility with their family and friends, or were there some people who just really wanted to be left alone, to grieve in private and not be asked about it?
Yeah, look, a bit of a mixture. Some of them said they were very open with family and friends, and they've found a lot of support in being open, even though they still get a lot of the sort of, oh, never mind, it'll happen in time, or, you know, have you tried relaxing? Or,
you know, just
all those
relax
comments that people make. Yeah. But some of them were very open and found a lot of support that way. But some people, particularly the ones who were still going through the current struggle to get pregnant, which probably out of the 18 people, there were about 7 people who are still in that stage trying to get pregnant. I think for them, it's just a bit too raw. They're too close to it at the moment. They're very, very sensitive about it, and they really didn't want to share it all with family and friends.
Yeah. You mentioned, though, that, you know, people were in different stages of their grief cycle. So some people had actually moved on, had accepted their situation, and was the sadness still always with them, or were they really able to sort of let go and move on?
Look, they really were able to let go and move on. I interviewed people from a range of ages. So I think the youngest was 27, and she's been trying for a number of years to get pregnant, and the oldest was in her mid-60s. So for the ones who were well beyond the childbearing years, sort of, I guess, from mid-40 onwards, they really have, all of them really have moved on. Again, it's a bit like losing a loved one, though, even though you get over it and you learn to find other things to make you happy and fulfill yourself in life, there'll always be that little spot in your heart, that little regret that they're not there. Mm-hmm. And it's the same, they've still got that little regret that there is no child there, but yes, they are happy, they have found other things. And very positively, the ones in that situation said how much stronger their relationship with their partners are now, because they've gone through this real roller coaster of experience together, but they have emerged out the other side with a much stronger relationship. So there are positives from it.
Okay, wow. Because I think, you know, in the moment, the stress on couples can be absolutely huge. Did they all survive their relationships?
They all have survived their relationship so far. The ones who are still going through it, though, a number of them made the comment that sometimes they just look at each other and think, well, why are we even trying to have a baby? But, you know, at that stage, they've just got, their relationships have broken down, the communication's just not there. There's the financial stress if they're going through fertility treatments. A couple of them have said that they stopped fertility treatments when they looked at each other and realised that, you know, it was ruining their relationship, basically, to continue on. Fortunately, they've all stayed together and they're stronger because of it, but it certainly does put a lot of pressure on relationships.
Mm. Now, your book, of course, also deals with the issue of people who are single and who can't have kids because they just haven't found a partner. So how were their experiences of being childless, you know, different than those who were dealing with infertility?
It's probably harder because they don't have a partner there to share the grief with. Any sort of grief, if you're going through it alone, it is that much harder than having someone there as support and backup for you. I think there's a real sense of failure in many ways, and not a question that I asked any of them, but pretty much all the women I interviewed, unprompted, said that they feel like a failure, particularly the ones who aren't in a relationship. They feel like a failure, they've failed as a woman because they haven't been able to reproduce, which is a very, what's the word I'm looking for, basic biological function, I guess. And the ones who were single, it was that much harder because there is nobody to share that with.
Yeah, I can see that would be the case, although I had never thought of it that way. I know it's something that I think people do need a lot of help to deal with. It's not something that people can deal with by themselves, and being single obviously adds that extra challenge. But for someone listening, I guess, who, you know, who may have a close friend or family member who's dealing with infertility, you know, what advice do you think you could give them about how to support their friend? Because there must have been some common themes, I guess, that came through.
I think the best thing, if you do have a good friend or a family member who is going through infertility, the best thing to do is, I think, just to let them know that you are there for them, that you won't pester them with questions all the time, but if they would like to talk about it, you're there and you're more than willing to listen and to be a support for them. What really annoyed some of the people who I interviewed was the sort of the trite comments, I guess, from friends and family, sort of the
count your blessings type of
comments.
Yeah,
that's right, the count your blessings, at least you've got each other, oh, well, you can always focus on your career, or, you know, have you tried having sex, or all these ridiculous things that people say, which sometimes is just our awkwardness in not knowing what to say. But I think if you do have a friend or family member going through it, you need to just take it back to basics and say, look, I know you're going through this struggle at the moment. If you would rather not talk about it, I fully understand. But if you would like to talk about it, I'm here to listen. I won't ask you any questions, but please feel free to volunteer anything you'd like me to know. Just something very basic like that, so they know you're there for them.
And probably one of the key things that you've mentioned, that the grief process is much like dealing with a death. Well, possibly for friends and family, if they can treat it in that same way, often when someone dies, you know, some people want to talk about it and some people don't, but they need to know that there are people loving them and supporting them, don't they?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think if you can see it as a very similar grief process, you know, if somebody does lose if we lose a parent or a sibling or something like that, it's a physical person who was there and then they're not. And that people can understand that because they knew the person was there. When it's an unborn child or a child that you're really desperately wanting to have, it is that same emotion, even though you haven't actually seen that person, if that makes sense. It doesn't mean that they're not just as real to the person who's desperately wanting to have them. So if you can see it as a grief process and give them a bit of understanding because of that.
Okay.
I hope that makes sense. It's very clumsily put. I don't know how else to sort of express it, though.
Well, it makes perfect sense to me. and I think to, you know, anyone who's sort of had been through that experience of wanting a child and not knowing whether they'll ever have one or not, you know, I'm sure there'll be many people listening today, Justine, who know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. So thank you very much for talking to us this morning. It's been great to share from what you learned. That's Justine Davies. She's the editor of An Inconceivable Notion, Stories of Coping with Infertility and Childlessness.
This has been a Hope 103.2 podcast. For helpful articles, station news, videos, devotional emails, and more podcasts, visit hope1032.com.au.